"We're going into that?" moaned Greer. "We can barely walk any more, you crazy bastard."
"That's Colonel Crazy Bastard to you, pal. No, we're not going into that. Not directly. We'll follow the edge of this promontory around. But that's where we're going, and we're going to get in there sooner or later. Dead on my damned feet I may be, but I've come a fethin' long way to be part of this."
Gaunt was in the thick of the fighting, at the foot of the outer wall. He hadn't been in a stand-up fight this fierce since Balhaut. He was so concentrated, so direct. The noise was bewildering. Nearby, Lieutenant Pauk's executioner was firing beam after beam of superheated plasma into the charging ranks, leaving lines of mangled corpses in the half-melted snow. Both the Heart of Destruction and the Lucky Bastard had run out of main gun shells and were reduced to bringing in their bulk and coaxial weapons in support of the ghosts. Brostin, Nescon, and the other flame troopers were out on the right flank, spitting gouts of yellow flame down the field that turned the hard-packed snow to slush and sent Infardi troops screaming back, their clothes and flesh on fire. The Imperials were holding, but in this hellish confusion, there was a chance that command coherency could be lost as wave after wave of the Chaos Breed stormed forward. Gaunt saw the first couple of enemy officers, just energized blurs moving amongst their troops, each one protected in the shimmering orb of a refractor shield. Nothing short of a point-blank tank round could touch them. He counted five of them amid the thick echelons of advancing enemy. Any one of them might be the notorious Pater Sin, come all this way to snatch his final triumph.
"Support me!"
Gaunt cried to the fire team at his heels. And they pushed out in assault, tackling the Infardi, sometimes hand to hand. Gaunt's bolt pistol fired shot after shot, and the power sword of Hieronymo Sondar whispered in his fist. Two ghosts beside him were cut down. Another stumbled and fell, his left arm gone at the elbow.
"For Tanith! For Vergast! For Sabbat!"
Gaunt yelled, his breath steaming the air.
"First and only! First and only!"
There was good support to his immediate left. Cafran, Creed, Beltane, Adair, Memo, and McKillian. Flanking them, Sergeant Bray's section, and the remains of a fireteam led by Corporal Maroy. Scything with his sword, Gaunt worried about the right flank. He was pretty sure Corporal McTeague was dead, and there was no sign of Obel's section, or of Sorek, who, with McColl, had operational command of that quarter. One of the Infardi officers was close now, cackling aloud, invisible in his ball of shield energy, against which the Imperial lasfire twinkled harmlessly. Using him as mobile cover, the Urshul foot troops were pounding at the ghosts. Memo tumbled, headshot, gone, and McKillian dropped a second later, hit in the thigh and hip.
"Cafran, tube him!"
Gaunt yelled.
"It won't breach the shield, sir."
"Put it at his feet, then. Knock the feather over!"
Cafran hurled a tube charge, spinning it end over end. It bounced in the thick snowpack right at the Infardi officer's feet and went off brightly. The blast didn't hurt the Urshul officer, but it effectively blew the ground out from under him, and he fell, his refractor shield hissing in the snow. Gaunt was immediately on him, yelling out, stabbing down two-handed with his power blade. Creed, Beltane, and Adair were right at his heels, gunning down the Urshul lord's bodyguard. Power sword met refractor shield. The shield was a model manufactured by chaos-polluted Mechanicus factories on the occupied forge world Ermune. It was powerful and effective. The power sword was so old, no one knew its original place of manufacture. It popped the shield like a needle lancing a blister. The fizzling cloak of energy vanished, and Gaunt's sword blade plunged on, impaling the screaming Infardi revealed inside. Gaunt wrenched the sword out and got up. The Infardi nearby, those who hadn't yet been dropped by his ghosts, backed off and ran in fear. By killing the officer in front of their eyes, he put a chink in their insane confidence. But it was a tiny detail of triumph in a much greater battle storm. Major Rawn, commanding units nearer to the main gate, could see no respite in the onslaught. The Infardi were throwing themselves at his position as fast as his troops in the snow trenches and on the wall parapet could fire on them. A row of self-repelled guns was working up behind the enemy infantry, and their munitions now came whistling down, throwing up great bursts of ice and fire. Two shells dropped inside the wall, and one hit the wall itself, blowing out a 10-meter chunk. Rawn saw the Grey Venger advancing over the snow, streaking titanic stripes of laser fire at the usurper guns. One was hit and sent up a fiery mushroom cloud. Rocket grenades slapped and banged off the Venger's hull. The Lion of Padua smashed directly through a faltering pack of Infardi troopers, dozer blade lowered, fighting to get a shot at the heavy gun units too. A tank round, coming from Emperor alone knew where, destroyed its starboard tracks, and it lurched to a stop. The shrieking Infardi were all over it, mobbing the hull, their green figures swarming across the crippled tank. Rawn tried to direct some of his troop fire to assist the Conqueror, but the range was bad, and they were too boxed in. Tank hatches were shot or blasted open, and the mob of Infardi dragged the Lion's crew out screaming.
"Feth, no!"
Rawn gasped, his warm exhalation becoming vapor. Without warning, another tank round hit the Lion, and blew it apart, exploding several dozen Infardi with it. Killing the Imperial armor seemed to be all the enemy cared about. In a snow trench 10 meters left of the Major, Larkin cursed and yelled out, "Cover me!" as he rolled back from his firing position. Troopers Ku and Tokar moved up beside the prone Bander and resumed firing. The barrel of Larkin's longlas had failed. He unscrewed the flash suppressor and then twisted and pulled out the long, ruined barrel. Larkin was so practiced at this task, he could swap the XC-52-3 strengthened barrels in less than a minute. But his bag of spares was empty.
"Feth!"
He crawled over to Bander, shots passing close over his head.
"Vergast, where's your spare rods?"
Bander snapped off another shot, and then reached round and pulled the clasp of her pack open.
"In there, down the side!"
Larkin reached in and pulled out a row of visicloth. There were three XC-52-3s wrapped in it.
"This all you got?
It's all Twenish was carrying!"
Larkin locked one into place, checked the line, and re-screwed his suppressor.
"They're not going to last any fething time at this pace," he grunted. "Should be more in the munition supplies, Tenneth,"
said Ku, clipping a new power cell into his weapon.
"Yeah, but who's going back into the shrine hold to get them?"
"Point,"
murmured Ku. Larkin blew on his mittened hands and began firing again.
"What's the tally?"
he hissed at Bander.
23,
she said without looking round. Only two less than him. Feth, she was good. Then again, who wouldn't score when they had this many damned targets to fire at? Rawn got a fire team forward as far as the cover provided by one of their own burning chimeras. Lillo, Goots, Kokoa, and Bane dropped into the filthy snow beside him, firing through the ranging smoke that boiled out of the machine. A moment later, Luhan, Filian, Kale, and Mazido moved up close and provided decent crossfire under Fagor's command. Rawn waved a third team, Orul, Sangul, Doro, Reis, and Muril, round to the far side of the chimera. They were reaching position when an Infardi counterpush hit. Two rounds from an AT-70 erupted like small volcanoes in their midst. Filian and Mazido were obliterated instantly. Kokoa was gashed by flying metal and fell screaming. Steam rose from his hot blood in the chill air. Goots and Bane ran forward to drag the bawling bloody Tanith into cover, but Goots was immediately hit in the leg by a las round. Bane turned in surprise and took two hits in the lower back. His arms lurched up and he fell on his face. Infardi troops rushed in from the left, weapons blazing. In the savage short-range firefight that followed, first Orul and then Sangul were killed by massive torso injuries. Doro managed to get Bane and Kokoa into cover, and then he was hit in the jaw with such destructive force his head was virtually twisted off. Rawn found himself pinned with Luhan, Lillo, Fagor, and Kale, fighting in support of Reis and Muril, who were closer to the trio of wounded ghosts.
"Three! That says three! We're penned!"
The blackened wreckage of a Munitorium troop truck, 50 meters ahead, splintered and rolled as something big pushed it aside. For a moment, Rawn felt relief, sure it was one of the Pardus Conquerors. But it wasn't. It was a Steg 4, squirming through the heavy snow cover on tires that were encrusted with slush, oil, and blood.
"Feth! Back! Back! Where the Gek too, sir?"
Lillo wailed. The Steg fired, and the whooping shell slammed through the dead chimera. There was a chilling wail from behind Rawn's position. Part animal shriek, part pneumatic hiss, a sound that swooped from high pitch to low. The output of a powerful beam weapon ripped into the front of the Steg, and a rush of pressurized flame blew out the side panels. It bounced to a halt, streaming smoke.
"Fall back! Get clear!"
Commissar Hark yelled to Rawn and his soldiers as he fired again in the midst of a charging Infardi platoon. They half-carried and half-dragged Goots, Kokoa, and Bane back the 20 meters to the nearest snowwork cover.
"I'm surprised to see you,"
Rawn told Hark flatly.
"I'm sure you are, Major, but I wasn't just going to sit in the shrine hold and wait for the end." "You won't have to wait long, Commissar,"
said Rawn, changing clips,
I'm sure you'll be pleased to note that this is it. The last stand of Gaunt and his ghosts.
Hark began, and then fell silent. As a commissar, even an unpopular, unwelcome one, it was his foremost duty to rally, to inspire the men, and to quell just that kind of talk. But he couldn't. Looking out at the forces that swept in to overrun and slaughter them, there was no denying it. The cold-blooded major was right. In the very heaviest part of the battle, Gaunt knew it too. Troopers fell all around him. He saw Caffran, wounded in the leg, being dragged to cover by Creed. He saw Adair hit twice, convulse, and drop. He saw two Vergastite ghosts thrown into the air by a shellburst. He almost fell over the stiffening corpse of Trooper Braille, the blood spats from his wounds frozen like gemstones. A Lazround hit Gaunt in the left arm and spun him a little. Another passed through the skirt of his stormcoat.
"First and only!"
he yelled, his breath smoking in the cold.
"First and only!"
Something happened to the sky. It changed abruptly from frozen chalk white to fulminous yellow, swirling with cloud patterns. A sudden, almost hot wind surged up the gorge.
"What the geck is that?" Bander murmured.
"Oh no," mumbled Larkin. "Chaos madness. Fethin chaos madness."
Silent auroras of purple and scarlet rippled across the sky. Crimson blooms swirled out and stained the sky like ink spots in water. Lightning strikes, searing violet white, sizzled and cracked down, accompanied by thunderclaps so loud they shook the mountain. The savage fighting foundered and ceased. Beneath the alien deluge, the Infadi fled back down to the pass, leaving their wounded and their crippled machines behind them. The mass exodus was so sudden they had cleared the approach fields of the Shrinehold in less than 10 minutes. The Imperials cowered in terror beneath the twisting light show. Vehicle engines stalled. Vox signals went berserk in whoops of interference and swarms of static. Many troopers wrenched their microbead earplugs out, wincing. Vox Officer Raglan's ears were bleeding by the time he'd managed to pull off his headset. Wild static charge filled the air, crackling off weapons, making hair stand on end. Greenish corpuscent and ball lightning wriggled and flared around the eaves and roofs of the Shrinehold. In the face of final defeat, something had saved Gaunt's honor guard, or at least allowed it a temporary reprieve. Ironically, that something was chaos.
"I have consulted the monastery's sensitives and psyker adepts," said Ayatani Ait Cortona. "It is a warp storm, a flux of the Empyrean. It is affecting all space near Hagia."
Gorn sat on a stool in the Shrinehold's main hallway, stripped to the waist as Medic Lesp suited and bound up his arm. "The cause?"
"The arch-enemy's fleet," replied Cortona.
Gaunt raised an eyebrow. "But that's not due to reach us for another 5 days."
"I don't believe it has. But a fleet of that size, moving through the ether, would create a massive disturbance, like the bow wave of a great ship, pushing the eddies and swirls of the warp ahead of it."
"And that bow wave has just broken over Hagia?"
"I see."
Gaunt stood up and flexed his bandaged arm.
"Thanks, Lesp. Immaculate needlework, as ever."
"Sir, I don't suppose there's any point advising you to rest it."
"None whatsoever. We get out of this, I'll rest it all you like."
"Sir."
"Now get to the triage station and do some proper work. There are many more needy than me."
Lesp saluted, collected up his Medicaid kit, and hurried out. Pulling on his shirt, Gaunt walked with Cortona to one of the open shutters and gazed out at the seething, malign fury of the sky above the sacred hills.
"No getting off planet now."
"Colonel Commissar?"
Gaunt looked round at the elderly High Priest.
"There's nothing good about that storm, Ayatani Ait, but there's some satisfaction to be derived from it, at least. If I had followed my orders and returned to the Doctrinopolis, I wouldn't have reached it until tomorrow, even under the best conditions. So, even if I'd got in before the evacuation deadline, I'd have been trapped."
"Like Lugo, and the last few hundred ships undoubtedly are," said Hark, suddenly there and in the conversation. A typical Hark-esque, no-warning appearance.
"You sound almost pleased, Hark."
"Hagia is about to be wiped from space, sir. Pleased is not the right word. But like you, I wager there is some cruel delight to be drawn from the idea of Lord General Lugo suffering along with us. Gaunt began to button up the braid froggings of his tunic. Major Rorne, another bête noir of yours, told me you did us proud in the fight today. Saved him and a good many others. It wasn't a service to you. It was service to the Golden Throne of Terra. I am a soldier of the Imperium and will make a good account of myself until death. The Emperor protects.
The Emperor protects, nodded Gaunt. Look, Commissar, for whatever it's worth, I have no doubts as to your courage, loyalty, or ability. You fought well all the way along. You've tried to do your duty, even if I haven't liked it. It took, I have to admit, a feth of a lot of guts to stand up in that room and try and take command off me. Guts had nothing to do with it. Guts had everything to do with it. I want you to know that you'll receive no negative report from me, if and when I ever get to make one, no matter what kind of report you choose to make. I bear you no ill will. I've always taken my duty to the Emperor fething seriously. Completely fething seriously. How could I possibly resent another man doing the same? I thank you for your civility and frankness. I wish things could have been, and could yet be, different between us. It would have been a pleasure to serve with you and the first and only without this cloud of resentment hanging over me.
Gaunt held out his hand, and Hark shook it.
I think so, too. The doors to the hall swung open, and cold air billowed in, bringing with it Major Cleopas, Captain Le Guin, Captain Marchese, and the ghost officers Sorik, McCall, Bray, Merrin, Thice, and Obel. They stomped their boots and brushed flakes from their sleeves.
Join me, Gaunt told Hark.
They joined the officers.
Gentlemen, where's Rorne?
There was some perimeter alert, sir. He went to check it out, said Merrin.
Gaunt nodded.
Any word on Corporal McTeague?
He was found alive, but badly shut up. They slaughtered his squad, but for two other men, said Sorik.
What is this, sir? Asked Corporal Obel. What drove the Infadi back? I thought they had us there, I really did.
They did, Corporal. They honestly did. But for the damnedest luck.
Gaunt quickly explained the nature of the storm effects as best as he understood it.
I think this sudden warp storm shocked the Ishul. I think they thought it was some apocalyptic sign from their dark gods and simply lost it. It is an apocalyptic sign from their dark gods, of course. That's the downside. Once they've regrouped, they'll be back, and stronger too, would be my wager. They'll know almighty hell is coming to help them.
So they'll assault again? Asked Marchese.
Before nightfall would be my guess, Captain. We must restructure our force disposition in time to meet the Urshul's next attack.
Is that what we're calling them now, sir? Asked Sorik.
Call them whatever you like, Sorik.
Bastards, suggested Cleopas.
Scum-sucking warp whores, said Thice.
Targets, said McCall, quietly. The men laughed. Whatever works for you, said Gaunt. Good. There was some damn morale left yet. Bray, Obel, drag over that table there. Captain Le Guin, I see you've brought charts. Let's get to work.
They'd just spread out the tank hunter's maps when Gaunt's vox bleeped.
One, go.
It was vox officer Beltane.
Major Rorne says to get out front, sir. Something's awry.
Awry. Always with that nervous, understated awry.
What's actually awry this time, Beltane?
Sir, that's the colonel, sir.
Gaunt ran out down the steps, through the snow lying between the inner and outer walls, towards the gate. Rorne and a section of men were just coming in, bringing with them 10 haggard, stumbling figures, caked in dirt and rime, half-starved and weary. Gaunt's eyes widened. He came to a halt. Trooper Derrin. Try again, Bragg. The Vergastite ghosts Vamberfeld and Nessa. Captain Dower, supporting a half-dead Pardus officer Gaunt didn't know.
Dawdon?
Great God, Emperor Dawdon! And Milo, Emperor, protect him, carrying a Hagian girl in his arms. And there, at the head of them, Colonel Colm Corbeck.
Colm! Colm, what the feth are you doing here?
Gaunt asked.
Did we miss all the fun, sir?
Corbeck whispered, and pitched over in the snow. Chapter 16 Infadi. It was always her greatest weapon. Surprise, you would call it, I suppose. The scope of her ability to produce the unexpected,
to turn the course of an engagement on its head, even the worst of defeats. I saw it happen many times. Something from nothing. Triumph from disaster. Until the very end, when, at the last, she could no longer work her miracles, and she fell. Warmaster Kiodrus, from The Path to the Nine Wounds, A History of Service with the Saint. The night of the 16th day fell, but it was not proper night. The surging maelstrom of the warp storm lit the sky above the shrine hold with pulses and cyclones of kaleidoscopic light and electromagnetic specters. The snows had ceased, and under the silent flickering glare, the embattled Imperials stood watch at battle readiness, gazing at the reflections of the rapidly fluctuating color patterns on the snowfield and the ice of the sacred hills. It was the stillest time, almost tranquil. Vivid color roiled and swelled, broke and ebbed all across the heavens. Barely a breeze stirred. Perhaps, as a result of the warp eddies, the temperature had risen to just above zero. In an anteroom in the monastery, Ayatani carefully lit the oil lamps and then left without a word. Gaunt put his cap and gloves on a side table. I'm very pleased you're here, but the commissar in me wants to know why. Fethcom, you were wounded, and you had orders to evacuate. Korbeck sat back on a daybed under the bolted, gloss-red shutters, his camo cloak pulled around him like a shawl, and a cup of hot broth in his hands.
Both facts true, sir. I'm afraid I can't really explain it.
You can't explain it?
No, sir. Not without sounding so mad you'll have me clapped in irons and locked in a padded cell immediately.
Let's risk that, said Gaunt. He'd poured himself a glass of sacra, but realized he didn't really want it. He offered it to Rawn, who shook his head, and then to Dorden, who took it and sipped it. The Tanith chief medic sat near the central fire pit. Gaunt had never seen him look so old, or so tired.
Tell him, Corm, Dorden said. Tell him, damn it. I didn't believe you at first either, remember?
No, you didn't. Corm sipped his broth, put it down, and pulled a box of cigars from his hip pouch. He offered them around.
If I may, said Ayatani Zwail,
rising up from his floor mat to take one. With a surprised grin, Korbeck lit it for him.
Haven't had one for years, smiled Zwail,
enjoying the first few puffs.
What's the worst it could do? Kill me?
Least of your worries now, father, said Rawn.
Too true.
I'm waiting, Com, said Gaunt.
Let me see. How best to put it. Well, the thing of it was,
at first, the Saint spoke to him, said Dorden, abruptly.
Zwail exploded in a coughing fit. Korbeck leaned forward to thump the old priest on the back.
Korbeck? Growled Gaunt.
Well, she did, didn't she? Said Dorden.
He turned to Gaunt and Rawn.
Don't look at me like that, either of you. I know how mad it sounds. That's how I felt when Colm told it to me. But answer me this. What in the name of the good God Emperor would make an old man like me come all this way, too? Eh? It almost killed me. The fething ladder of heaven. It nearly killed all of us. But none of us are mad. None of us. Not even Colm.
Oh, thanks for that, said Korbeck. I need more, began Gaunt.
A whole fething lot more, agreed Rawn, helping himself to a stiff drink after all.
I had these dreams. About my old dad. Back on Tanith. Prize County, said Korbeck.
Aha, here we go, said Rawn.
Get out if you don't want to listen, spat Dorden.
Rawn shrugged and sat. The mild old medic had never spoken to him like that before.
He was trying to tell me something, Korbeck went on. This was right after I'd been through the clutches of that Pater Sin.
Trauma, then, suggested Gaunt.
Oh, very probably. If it makes it easier for you, we can pretend I slogged 300 fething kilometers just because I wanted to be with you at the last stand of the ghosts. And these people were fool enough to follow me.
That is easier to pretend, said Rawn.
Agreed, Major, said Gaunt. But humor us, Korbeck, and tell us the rest.
Through my father, in my dreams, the Saint called me. I can't prove it, but it's a fact. She called me. I didn't know what to do. I thought it was cracking up. Then I discovered Dower felt the same way. From the moment he was injured, he'd been taken by this niggle, this itch that wouldn't go away, no matter how hard he tried to scratch it.
Captain? Asked Gaunt.
Dower sat over in the corner, and so far he'd said nothing. The cold and fatigue of his hard journey had played hell with his wound-weakened state.
It's as the colonel describes. A head. A feeling.
Right, said Gaunt. He turned back to Corbeck. And then what? This feeling was so strong you and Dower broke orders, deserted, and took the others with you?
About that, admitted Corbeck.
Breaking orders? Where have I heard that recently?
Murmured Zweil, relighting his cigar. Shut up, father, said Gaunt.
Corbeck told me what was going on,
said Dawden, quietly.
He told me what was in his head and what he planned to do. I knew he was trying to rope in able-bodied troopers to go with him. I tried to argue him out of it. But by then the saint had spoken to me, too.
Feth me, Rawn exclaimed. She'd spoken to you too, Tolin? Asked Gaunt, steadily. Dawden nodded.
I know how it sounds, but I'd been having these dreams. About my son, Mikal.
That's understandable, Doctor. That was a terrible loss for the ghosts and for you.
Thank you, sir. But the more Corbeck talked to me about his own dreams, the more I realized they were like mine. His dead father, my dead son, coming to each of us with a message. Captain Dower was the same, but in a different way. Someone, something, was trying to communicate with us.
And so the three of you deserted?
Yes, sir, said Dower.
I'm sorry about that, sir, said Corbeck. Gaunt breathed deeply in contemplation. And the others? Were they spoken to?
Not as far as I know, said Corbeck. We just recruited them.
Milo had come back with the wounded and desperately wanted to rejoin the company, so he was easy to convince. He brought in the girl, Sanian, her name is. She's Isholi. We knew we needed local knowledge, but for her guidance we'd have been dead many times over by now, shot or frozen on the mountainside.
She found our way for us,
joked Dawden darkly.
I pray to the Golden Throne she finds her own now.
Bragg, well, you know, try again. He'll do any damn thing I tell him, said Corbeck. He was so eager to help. Darren, too. Vamberfeld. Nessa. When you've got a colonel, a captain, and a chief medic asking you to break the rules and help them out, life or death, I think you go for it. None of them are to blame. None should be punished. They gave their all. For you, really.
For me? Asked Gaunt.
That's why they were doing it. We'd convinced them it was a life-or-death mission above and beyond orders. That you'd have approved. That you'd have wanted it. That it was for the good of the ghosts and for the Imperium.
You say you had to convince them, Corbeck, said Rawn. That implies you had to lie.
None of us lied, Major, said Dawden, bluntly. We knew what we had to do, and we told them about it.
They followed because they're loyal ghosts.
What about the Pardus? Sergeant Greer, is it?
We needed a driver, sir, Dower said. I'd met Greer a little while before. He didn't need much convincing.
You told him about the saint and her messages?
Yes, sir.
He didn't believe them, obviously.
Obviously, echoed Rawn.
Dower faltered, ashamed.
I told him we were deserting to go and liberate a trove of Ayatani gold from the sacred hills.
Then he went along willingly. Just like that. Dower clicked his fingers.
At last,
said Rawn, refilling his shot glass.
A motivation I can believe.
Is there a trove of Ayatani gold in the sacred hills?
Zweil asked, blowing casual but perfect smoke rings.
I don't believe so, father, said Dower, miserably.
Oh, good. I'd hate to be the last to know.
Gaunt sat down on a stool by the door, ruminated, and stood up again almost at once. Corbeck could tell he was nervous, edgy.
I'm sorry, Abram, he began.
Gaunt held up a commanding hand. Save it, Com. Tell me this. If I believe this miraculous story 1 millimeter, what happens now? What are you all here for? Corbeck looked at Dawden, who shrugged. Dower put his head in his hands.
That's where we all kind of run out of credibility, sir, said Corbeck.
That's where it happens, Rawn chuckled. Excuse me, Gaunt, but I thought that moment had passed long ago. Perhaps, Major. So, none of you have any idea what you're supposed to do now you're here?
No, sir, said Dower. Not a clue, said Corbeck.
I'm sorry, said Dawdon.
Very well, said Gaunt. You should return to the billets arranged for you and get some sleep. The three members of the wounded wagon party nodded and began to get up.
Oh, no, 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 said Zweil suddenly. That's not an end to it, not at all.
Father, Gaunt began,
it's late, and we're all going to die in the morning. Let it go.
I won't,
said Zweil.
He stubbed out his cigar butt in a saucer.
A good smoke, Colonel, thank you. Now, sit down and tell me more.
This isn't the time, Father, said Gaunt.
It is the time. If this isn't the time, I don't bloody know what is. The saint spoke to these men and sent them out after us on a holy cause.
Please, said Rawn sourly,
a holy cause. Like it or not, believe it or not, these men are infardi.
They're what? Cried Rawn, reaching for his las pistol as he leapt up.
Infardi, infardi, what's your word for it? Pilgrims, the bloody pilgrims. They have come all this way in the name of the hallowed Beatty. Don't spurn them now.
Sit down, Rawn, and put the sidearm away. What do you suggest we do, Father Zweil?
Ask them the obvious question, Colonel Commissar.
Which is?
What did the saint say to them?
Gaunt ran his splayed hands back through his cropped blonde hair. His left arm throbbed.
Fine. For the record, what did the saint say to you?
Sabat mater,
Dawdon, Corbeck, and Dower replied in unison. Gaunt sat down sharply.
Oh, sacred faith, he murmured.
Sir? Queried Rawn, getting up. What does that mean?
That means she's probably been speaking to me, too.
Sanian,
Milo called her name as he edged down the dim corridors of the Shrinehold. The wind outside wailed down the flues of the air shafts. Bizarre reflections of light from the warp storm outside spilled across the tiled floor from the casements. He saw a figure sitting on one of the hallway benches.
Sanian? Hello, Milo. What are you doing?
He could see what she was doing. Clumsily and inexpertly, she was field-stripping and loading an Imperial las rifle. She looked around at him as he approached, put down the chamber block and the dirty visicloth, and kissed him impetuously on the cheek. Her fingers left a smudge of oil on his chin.
What was that for? For helping me.
Helping you to do what? She didn't reply immediately. She was trying to screw in the rifle's barrel the wrong way.
Let me, said Milo, reaching around her to grip the weapon.
So what have I helped you to do? She watched as his expert hands locked the rifle system together.
Praise you to the saint, Bryn. Praise you.
Why?
What have I done?
He asked as she took the weapon from his hands.
You,
she smiled.
You and your ghosts. From them I have found my way. I am Isholi no longer. I see the future. I see my way at last.
Your way? So, what is it? Outside, the warp storm blistered across the night sky.
It's the only way there is, she said.
I'm sorry, but this is crazy, Rawn cried, hurrying to catch up with Gaunt, Dawdon, Corbeck, Zweil, and Dower as they strode down the long cloisters of the Shrinehold, heading for the Holy Sepulchre.
What is this commotion?
Asked an Ayatani, coming out of a pair of inner doors.
Go back to bed,
Zweil told him as they rushed past. Gaunt stopped dead, and they slammed into him from behind. He turned around.
Rawn's right. This is Fething stupid. There's nothing in it.
You said yourself, some voice has murmured Sabat Mater to you several times,
reminded Dawdon.
It did. I thought it did. Feth, this is madness.
How long have we been thinking that?
Dawdon looked aside at Corbeck.
It doesn't matter how stupid it feels,
Zweil said.
Get in there, into the sepulchre. Test it.
I've already been there. You know that,
said Gaunt.
On your own, maybe. Not with these other infardi.
I wish you'd stop using that word, said Rawn.
And I wish you'd bugger off,
Zweil told him.
Stop it, all of you, cried Gaunt. Let's just go and see what happens.
Vams,
whispered Bragg, pushing open the heavy red door of the sepulchre. He wasn't sure where he was, but it looked a feth of a lot like a place he shouldn't be. The chamber was dark, the air was smoky, and the floor was squeaky. Bragg edged across the shiny tiles carefully. They looked valuable. Too valuable for his big boots.
Farms? Meat?
Scary hollows of space marines loomed out of alcoves in the black walls.
For faith's sake, farms!
Behind the polished altar, and under a big hood of what looked to Bragg like bone, he saw Vamberfeld, bending over a small hardwood casket in the shadows.
Worms! Bragg approached the altar. What are you doing in here? Look, Bragg!
Vamberfeld held up an object he had taken from the casket.
It's her jiddy stick, the cane used by Sabbat herself to drive her chelon to market. Great. I reckon you ought to put that back,
Bragg said.
Should I? Maybe. Anyway, look at this, Bragg. Remember that broken crook I found? See? It matches exactly the broken haft they have here. Can you believe it? Exactly. I think I found a piece of the saint's actual crook. I think I should get you to the dock, mate, Bragg said carefully. We shouldn't be in here. I think we should. I think I should.
The sepulchre door creaked open behind them.
Faith, someone's coming in, said Bragg, worried. Stay here. Don't touch anything else, okay? Not a thing.
He walked back into the main area of the sepulchre.
What the faith are you doing here?
Vamberfeld heard Bragg ask a few seconds later. He turned and stared out of the gloomy reliquary. His friend Bragg was talking to someone.
Same as you, Tanif. I've come for the gold.
The gold? What fething gold?
Vamberfeld heard Bragg reply.
Don't screw with me, big guy, the other voice said. I have no intention of screwing with you. Put that auto down, Greer. It's not funny anymore.
Don't. Not in here, Vamberfeld thought. Please not in here. His hand was starting to shake. He got up and came out of the reliquary. Greer was standing inside the big red door, which he'd closed behind him. He looked sick and desperate and twitchy. His skin was haggard and blotchy from the ordeal they'd all been through. He was pointing a guard-issue auto-pistol at Bragg. The moment Vamberfeld appeared, Greer flicked the muzzle to cover him as well.
Two of you, eh? I expected as much. That's why I came down here. Trying to cheat me out of my cut, eh? Did Dar put you up to this, or are you stabbing him in the back too?
What the good faith are you talking about? Asked Bragg.
The gold! The damn gold! Stop playing innocent. There is no gold, said Vamberfeld,
trying to stop his hand shaking.
I told you that. Shut up! You're not right in the head, you psycho. You've got nothing I want to hear. Why don't you put the gun down, Greer?
Asked Bragg, taking a step forward. The gun switched back to cover him.
Don't move. Don't try that crap. Show me the gold. Now. You got here before me. You must have found it. There is no gold,
Vamberfeld repeated.
Shut the hell up,
spat Greer, swinging the gun back to cover the Vergastite.
This is getting out of hand, said Bragg. We've got to calm down.
Okay. Okay. Greer seemed to agree.
Look, we'll split it three ways. Gold's heavy. I can't carry it all, and there's no way I'm staying here tonight. Chaos is going to be all over this shithole any time. Three-way split. As much as we can take. You help me carry it back down the ladder to the Chimera. What do you say?
I'd say, one, you know we'd never make it back all that way, especially laden down. Two, the whole planet's falling to chaos, so there's nowhere to run to. And three, there is no feth and gold.
Screw you, then. I'll take what I can myself. As much gold as I could carry.
There is no gold, said Vamberfeld.
Shut up, you head job,
screamed Greer, aiming the gun at Vamberfeld.
Make him shut up, Tanith! Make him stop saying that!
But it's true,
said Vamberfeld. His hand was shaking so much, so hard. Trying to make it stop, he pushed it into his pocket.
What the hell? Are you going for a weapon?
Greer aimed the gun straight-armed at Vamberfeld, his finger squeezing.
No!
Bragg lunged at Greer, grappling frantically at his weapon. The pistol discharged. The round hit Vamberfeld in the chest and threw him over onto his back.
Vams!
Bragg raged in horror.
God, Emperor Feth, you bastard!
His massive left fist crashed into Greer's face, hurling the pardus back across the sepulchre with blood spurting from his broken nose and teeth. The gun fired again twice, sending one bullet through Bragg's right thigh and the other explosively through the front of the chelon shell altar in a spray of lustrous shards. Bragg lunged at Greer again, big hands clawing. The pardus sergeant's first shot didn't even slow Bragg down, even though it went right through his torso. Neither did the second. The third finally brought Bragg down, hard on his face, at Greer's feet.
"You stupid pair of bastards!"
Greer snarled contemptuously at the fallen men, trying to staunch the blood pouring out of his smashed face. The Vagastide lay on the floor beside Bragg, face up, staring at the roof shadows high above through sightless eyes. Bragg was face down. A wide and spreading lake of blood seeped out across the ancient precious tiles from each of them. The Pardus sergeant strode in towards the sepulchre.
"What the feth? Did you hear that?" Corbeck cried. "Shooting. From the sepulchre," said Gaunt.
He pulled his bolt pistol out and started to run. The others raced after him, Dawdon lagging, his weary legs too leaden. They burst into the sepulchre, Gaunt's boot slamming the massive door wide.
"Oh, feth me, no! Doc!"
bellowed Corbeck, gazing at the bodies and the blood.
"Who would do this?"
Zweil gasped.
"There! Down there!"
cried Rorn, his las pistol already drawn. In the reliquary itself, Greer dived for cover behind the altar. He'd overturned the hardwood relic casket in his frantic search, spilling the ancient pieces across the floor. The glass covers over the gospel stands were smashed. The venerated Imperator armor was half slumped off its palanquin.
"Where is it? Where's the gold, you bastards?"
he screamed, ripping off several shots. Rorn cried out in pain as he was twisted round off his feet. Gaunt grabbed Zweil and threw himself down on top of the old priest as a shield. Corbeck and Dower ducked hard. Dawdon, just reaching the door, sought cover behind the frame.
"Greer! Greer! What the feth are you doing?"
bawled Corbeck.
"Back off! Back the hell off or I'll kill you all!"
yelled Greer, firing three more shots that punched into the shrine's door or chipped the black corundum of the walls.
"Greer!" cried Dower.
"It's me, Dower! What are you doing?"
Several more shots whined over his head. Dower had his las pistol out. He glanced at Corbeck, hunched on the polished tiles next to him. A meaningful look.
"Greer, you'll blow everything! You'll ruin it for us!" "Where is it, Dower?"
shouted Greer, slamming a new clip into his sidearm's grip.
"It isn't here!"
"It is!
Gack it, Greer! You're screwing up all the plans!"
"Plans?" murmured Rorn through gritted teeth. Dawdon was hastily dragging him back into the cover of the doorway. The bullet had punched through Rorn's forearm.
"You weren't going to do anything until I gave you the word!"
Dower yelled, trying to edge forward. Greer fired again, crazing several 6,000-year-old shell tiles.
"Plans change! You ghosts were going to ditch me!"
"No, we can still do this!
You hear me? You want to? I can show you the gold! Go with me on this!"
"I don't know."
"Come on!"
cried Dower, and leapt upright, turning to point his las pistol at Corbeck, Gaunt, and the others.
"Drop the guns! Drop them!"
"What?" stammered Gaunt.
"I guess you got us, Dower,"
said Corbeck, tossing aside his las pistol and staring at Gaunt as hard as he could.
"I got them covered, Greer. Come on, we can run for it. Come on, I'll take you to the gold and we can leave these bastards to die. Greer!"
Greer rose from behind the altar, his gun in his hand.
"You know where the gold is?"
Dower turned, his aimed weapon swinging from the sheltering ghosts, to point at Greer.
"There is no gold, you stupid bastard,"
he said, and shot Greer between the eyes. Dawdon ran into the room and knelt by the bodies of Bragg and Vamberfeld.
"They're a mess, but I've got pulses on both. Thank the Emperor the maniac wasn't packing a las. We need medic teams here right now."
Standing in the doorway, clutching his bloody arm, Rorn spoke into his microbead.
"Three in the sepulchre. I require medical teams here right now."
Gaunt got back to his feet and helped the winded Zweil up.
"Captain Dower, perhaps you'd give me a warning next time you plan to play a bluff that wild. I almost shot you."
Dower turned to the Colonel Commissar and held out his las pistol, but first.
"I doubt there'll be a next time. This is my fault. I led Greer on. I knew he was dangerous, I just didn't realize how gacking far he'd go."
"What are you doing, Dower?" asked Gaunt, looking at the gun.
"It's a court-martial offense, sir," said Dower.
"Oh, at least," said Corbeck, with a wide grin. "Saving the lives of your commanding officers like that."
"Nice,"
Rorn nodded at Dower.
"I never realized you were such a devious bastard, Captain."
"We'll talk about this later, Dower," said Gaunt, and walked past the altar and Greer's spread-eagled corpse. He stared in dismay at Greer's wanton desecration.
"Just so I'm absolutely sure,"
Zweil whispered to Dower,
"there really isn't a trove of Iatani gold here, is there?"
Dower shook his head.
"Just, you know, checking."
Gaunt righted the relic casket and began putting the scattered fragments back reverently.
"What's keeping Lesp?"
growled Dawdon. He was trying to keep compression on Bragg's most serious injury.
"I need a medikit kit. Both of them are bleeding out. Colm, get some pressure there on Vamberfeld's chest. No, higher. Keep it tight."
The sound of running footsteps came from outside. Milo and Sanian burst in through the doorway and stopped dead.
"I heard shooting,"
said Milo, out of breath.
"Oh, great God, Emperor! What's happened? Bragg!"
"Everything's under control, lad,"
said Corbeck, his hands drenched in Vamberfeld's blood. He wasn't convinced.
In the reliquary, Gaunt seemed almost beside himself with agony as he tried to set things right.
"What was that?"
asked Rorn, sharply, looking around.
"What was what?" said Corbeck.
"That noise. That hum."
"I didn't... Oh, yeah. That's kind of scary."
"A vibration," said Rorn. "The whole place is shaking. It must be the Infardi attacking,"
said Milo.
"No,"
said Zweil, with remarkable calm.
"I think it must be the Infardi reaching the sepulchre."
The candles flickered and went out all at once. Pale undersea light washed through the ancient tomb, green and cold. The holograms of the Adeptus Astartes dissolved and vanished, and in their place columns of bright white hololithic light extended from floor to ceiling. The black stone walls sweated, and a pattern of previously invisible geometric blue bars glowed into life out of the stone, all the way around the chamber. Everything shook with the deep, ultrasonic growl.
"What the feth is happening?"
stammered Rorn.
"I can hear," Dower began.
"So can I,"
said Dawdon, looking up in wonder. Silent phantom lights like ball lightning shimmered and circled above their heads.
"I can hear singing," said Corbeck. "I can hear my old dad singing."
There were tears in his eyes. In the reliquary, Gaunt slowly rose to his feet and gazed at the bier on which Saint Sabbat lay. He could smell the sweet, incorruptible fragrance of spices, acetus and islambine. The body of the saint began to shine, brighter and brighter, until the white radiance was too bright to stare at.
"Beatty,"
Gaunt murmured. The light streaming out from the bier was so fierce, all the humans within had to close their eyes. The last thing Corbeck saw was the faint silhouette of Ibram Gaunt, kneeling before the saint's bier, framed by the white ferocity of a star's heart. The light died away, and the sepulchre returned to the way it had been before. Blinking, speechless, they gazed silently at each other. For the time it had lasted, no more than a few seconds, a calm but inexorable psychic force of monumental power had penetrated their minds.
"A miracle,"
murmured Zweil, sitting down on the floor.
"A proper miracle. A transcendent miracle. You all felt that, didn't you?"
"Yes,"
sobbed Sanian, her face streaming with tears. Dawdon nodded.
"Of course we did,"
said Corbeck quietly.
"I don't know what that was, but I've never been so scared in my life,"
said Rorn.
"I'm telling you, Major Rorn, it was a miracle,"
said Zweil.
"No," said Gaunt, emerging from the reliquary. "It wasn't."
Chapter 17. Sabbat's Martyr. There are no miracles, there are only men. Saint Sabbat, Epistles. The Eshul's final assault began at 2 o'clock on the morning of the 17th day. In the silence of a snowless, clear night, under the spasming auroras of the warp storm, they committed their entire strength to the attack on the Shrinehold. Support columns of reinforcements had been pushing up the pass all day and into the night. The Eshul were legion strength. 9,000 devotee warriors. 570 armored machines. Just under 2,000 able-bodied imperial troops defended the Shrinehold, supported by the last 4 conquerors, 1 executioner, 1 destroyer, and a handful of chimeras, salamanders, and hydra batteries. All they had on their side was the strategic strength of their walled position and the comparative narrowness of the approach across the promontory. The staggering power of the Eshul bombardment hammered down on the imperial lines. The honor guard did not fire back. They were so low on ammunition and shells, they had to wait to pick their targets. The Eshul host advanced towards them. Standing on the inner wall, Gaunt surveyed their approaching doom through his scope. Even by his best estimate, they would be able to hold out for no more than 20 or 30 minutes. He turned and looked at Rawn and Hark. Rawn's arm was thickly bandaged. "I don't really think it matters how we fight this now, but I want you both to head down and rally the men for as long as you can. Do anything you can to buy time." The men nodded. "The Emperor protects," Gaunt said, shaking them both by the hand.
"We're not done yet, sir," said Hark.
"I know, Commissar. But remember, sometimes the carnive gets you." The officers strode away down the wall steps together. Walking towards their deaths, Gaunt thought, taking one last look at the Major and the Commissar. "And I should be there with them." He turned and hurried back to the sepulchre, where the others were waiting.
"A miracle,"
Ayatani Ait Cortona was declaring yet again. His principal clerics gathered around him.
"I keep telling you it's not," growled Zwile, "and I have it on good authority." "You are just Imhava. What do you know?"
snapped Cortona.
"A feth of a lot more than you, Tempelum," said Zwile.
"You've been hanging out with the wrong crowd, picking up filthy language like that," Korbeck said to Zwile.
"Story of my woe-begotten life, Colonel," said Zwile.
Gaunt entered the sepulchre, and everyone turned to him. "There is so little time, I have to be brief. This was not a miracle."
"But we all felt it, throughout the Shrinehold, the blessed power singing in our minds," cried Cortona.
"It was a psychic test pattern, the activation signature of an ancient device that I believe is buried under the shrine."
"A what?"
asked one of the Ayatani. "The Adeptus Mechanicus constructed this place to house the saint. I believe they laced the entire rock underneath us with dormant psychotechnology, the power and purpose of which we can only guess at. Was I the only one who got that from the psychic wave? It seemed quite clear."
"Technology to do what?" sneered Cortona.
"To protect the Beatty, in the event of a true catastrophe, like this influx of the warp. To safeguard her final prophecy."
"Preposterous! Why did we not know of it then?"
asked another Shrinehold priest.
"We are her chosen, her sons."
6,000 years is a long time," said Korbeck. "Time enough to forget. Time enough to turn facts into myths."
"But why now? Why does it manifest now?" asked Cortona.
"Because we came, her Infardi. Gathered together in her sepulchre, we triggered the mechanism."
"How?"
"Because our minds responded to the call. Because we came. Because through us, the mechanism recognized the time for awakening had come."
"That's nonsense. Blasphemy even," cried the Ayatani Ait. "It presumes you soldiers are more holy than the secret brotherhood. Why would it wake for you when it has never woken for us?" "Because you're not enlightened. Not that way," said Zwile, drawing a gasp from the priests. "You tend, and you keep vigil and reread the texts. But you do so out of inherited duty, not belief. These men really believe."
He gestured to Korbeck, Dower, and Gaunt. There was a lot of angry shouting. "There's no time to debate this. You hear that? The forces of chaos are at the gates. We have a chance to use the technology the saint has left for us. We have barely any time to figure out how."
"Sanyan and I have been studying the hologram, sir," said Myla.
He gestured to the glowing bars of light in the shrine's corundum walls, lights that had not yet faded.
"These are depictions of her holy crusade," said Sanyan, tracing certain runes. "The triumphs of Frengold, Escaria, and Hakalon. A mention of her trusted commanders. Here, for instance. The name of Lord Militant Kiodris."
"You're going to have to cut to the chase," Gaunt interjected. "We've only got a few minutes left."
Sanyan nodded.
"The activation mechanism for the technology appears to be here."
She pointed to a small runic chart glowing on the wall.
"The Pillar of the Eternal Flame, at the very tip of the promontory."
"How are we to use it?"
"Something must be put in place,"
said Sanyan, frowning.
"Some trigger icon. I'm not sure what this pictogram represents."
"I am,"
said Dower. He rose from his stool and took the silver trinket from his pocket.
"I think this is what we need."
"You seem remarkably sure, Ban," said Gaunt.
"I've never been so sure about anything, sir."
"Right, no more time for talk. Pass me that and I'll—"
"Sir," said Dower, "it was given to me. I think I'm supposed to do this."
Gaunt nodded. Very well, Ban, but I'm coming with you.
Rally! Rally, my brave boys and girls!
Sorek yelled above the roar of explosions. Infardi shells had torn the gate and the front part of the inner wall away.
This is what we were born for! Deny the arch-enemy of mankind! Deny him now!
Gaunt, Korbeck, Milo, Sanyan, and Dar approached the back gate of the outer Shrinehold wall. The din of battle behind them was deafening. They readied their weapons. Sanyan hefted up her las rifle. "We're going to get killed out there," Milo told her. "Are you sure you want to do this?"
"My way, remember? War. War is the only true way, and I have found it."
"For Sabbat!" cried Gaunt, and threw open the gate.
"Power batteries have failed,"
Pauk's gunner told him.
"Restart them! Restart them!"
the lieutenant shouted.
"The couplings have burnt out! We've put too much stress on them!"
"Hell, there's got to be a way to—"
Pauk began. He never finished his sentence. Usurper shells atomized the old executioner tank, Strife.
"Pull the line back! Fagor, pull the line back!"
Rorn yelled. The Urshul, or whatever their fething name was, were all over their positions now. The pillar seemed 100 kilometers away, across the snow, gleaming at the very end of the jagged promontory. Gaunt and his party ran forward in the snow, lasfire from the circling enemy flank zapping over and between them.
"Come on!"
Gaunt yelled, firing his bolt pistol at the green-clad Urshul, storming forward to cut them off.
"No! No!"
Korbeck yelped as a las round hit his leg and brought him down. Sanyan turned and fired her gun on full auto, ripping into the enemy. She wasn't used to the recoil, and it threw her over into the snow.
"Sanyan! Sanyan!"
Milo stopped to pull her up as Gaunt and Dower ran on.
"Come on, I'll get you back to the—"
The butt of her gun hit Milo in the side of the head, and he fell over unconscious.
"Bless you, Milo, but you won't rob me of this," she muttered. "This is my way. I'm going to take it in the name of the saint. Don't try to stop me. Forgive me."
She ran after the others, leaving Milo curled in the snow. 20 meters ahead of her, Dower was hit. He fell sideways into the snow, screaming in anger. Gaunt stopped and ran back to him. The wound was in his side. He was yelling. There was no way he was going to be able to carry on.
"Ban, give me the trigger icon. Ban!"
Dower held the silver trinket out, clasped in his bloody fingers.
"Whoever does this will die,"
he said.
"I know.
The psychic burst told me that. It needs a sacrifice. A martyr."
"I know.
Sabbat's martyr."
"I know, Ban."
"The Emperor protects, Ibram."
"The Emperor protects."
Gaunt took the silver figurine and began to run towards the pillar. Ban Dower tried to rise. To see. The last fire of the enemy was too bright. The thunder of war, of Armageddon, shook the walls. Hands bloody, Dorden fought to save Bragg's life in the Shrinehold antechamber Lesp had turned into a makeshift infirmary.
"Clamp, here!"
Lesp obeyed. It was futile, Dorden knew. Even if he saved Bragg's life, they were all dead.
"Fuskin!"
Dorden yelled over as he worked.
"How's Vamberfelt doing?"
"I thought you had him,"
said Fuskin, jumping up from his work on another of the injured.
"He isn't here,"
said Chaker.
"Where the feth has he gone?"
Dorden cried. Through the prismatic scope of his sight, Le Guin saw Captain Marchese's P-48J blow out in a swirl of sparks. Barely a second later, the same AT-70 that had killed Marchese and his crew put a shell through the side of the Grey Venger. Le Guin's layer and loader were both disintegrated. The destroyer lurched and stopped dead, its turbines failing for the very last time. Fire swirled through the compartment, up under Le Guin's feet. His hair was singed. He tried the hatch above him. It was jammed shut. Resignedly, Captain Le Guin sat back in his command chair and waited for the end. Freezing cold air gusted in around him as the hatch opened.
"Come on! Come on!"
Scout Sergeant McColl yelled down at him, his arms outstretched. Le Guin looked around himself for a moment at the ruined interior of his beloved tank.
"Goodbye,"
he said, and then reached up and allowed McColl to pull him out. McColl and Le Guin had got 20 meters from the Grey Venger when it exploded and flattened them both.
"Too many! Too many!"
cried Larkin, firing through his last remaining barrel.
Beside him, a Laz shot struck Trooper Koo in the shoulder and threw him back into the bloody snow.
"Oh, Feth, too many,"
Larkin murmured.
"No, Tanith,"
smiled Banda beside him as she fired again and again.
"Not nearly enough." "Think I win my wager,"
croaked Koo, staring up at the warp storm that blistered overhead.
"Sure as sure."
Gaunt was just 30 meters from the pillar, running through the blitz of shots. Infardi were closing all around him. He didn't feel the Laz round hit his shin, but his leg went dead, and he fell, tumbling over and over in the drifts.
"No!"
he cried out.
"No, please!"
A figure bent over him. It was Sanyan, her Laz rifle trained on the advancing enemy. She sprayed off a burst and then turned to Gaunt.
"I'll take it. Let me."
Gaunt knew he couldn't move unaided.
"Just help me up, girl. I can make it." "Give it to me. I can move faster alone. It's what she wants."
Hesitating, Gaunt reached out his hand, the trigger icon in it.
"Do it right, girl,"
he said through pain-gritted teeth. She took the silver icon.
"Don't worry, I..."
Fierce Laz fire exploded in the snow around them. 3 Eshul troopers were just a few meters away. Sanyan turned to fire, the unfamiliar Laz rifle awkward in her hands. The closest Eshul aimed his weapon to kill her. She threw herself down in desperation. Pinpoint Lazfire toppled her would-be killer and the 2 Eshul behind him. Spraying Laz shots into the face of the enemy, Milo ran to them both, blood streaming from his head.
"Good work, Milo,"
said Gaunt, struggling for breath and rising on his elbow to fire his bolt pistol.
"The icon! Where is it?"
Milo called, looking around.
"I can make it. It's not far. Where the Feth is it?" "It was here. I had it in my hand,"
Sanyan replied, groping about in the snow as blisteringly intense shots fell around them.
"Where is it? Oh, God Emperor, where the hell is it?"
Major Clearpass was smiling. He didn't need his augmetic implant to see it. The view through the scope was clear. The last round fired from the Heart of Destruction had destroyed a Reaver in a bloom of fire. But it was the last round. The last round ever. His valiant crew were dead. Flames filled his turret basket, igniting his clothes. He couldn't move to escape. Shrapnel had destroyed his legs and severed his spine.
"Damn you all to hell,"
he gasped out, word by word, as the inferno surged up around him and consumed him. The ghosts around him were falling back in panic in the face of the overwhelming host.
"There's nowhere to run to,"
mumbled Commissar Hark, firing at the foe. Blood from a head wound was running down his cheek, and he'd lost his cap. An Urshul officer, another swirling ball of shield energy, loomed ahead of him. He'd killed 3 of its kind so far. Hark hoped this was Pater Sin.
"For the saint! For the ghosts! For Gaunt!"
he bellowed at the top of his voice. He fired his plasma pistol, and the shield exploded. Half buried in the snow under the enemy onslaught, Sanyan cried out,
"Oh, my lord! Look! Look!"
Returning fire, Gaunt and Milo both looked around.
"Good Feth,"
Gaunt stammered. It was cold out there, on the edge of the promontory. From below the lip, howling gorge winds cut like knives. Overhead, the warp storm blistered the heavens. The pillar stood just ahead, a massive finger of corundum, fire flaming from the top of it. Close now. It was hard going. He'd been hurt badly. Including the chest wound Greer had dealt him, he had 7 wounds. Lazfire from the Urshul had stabbed at him ferociously these last 10 meters. Dower's silver trinket was clamped tightly in his hands. It had just been lying there, in the snow, as if it was waiting for him. A Laz blast clipped his calf. 8. Almost there. He could see her piercing eyes. The little girl. The herder. He could smell the wet stink of the Chelon's nests and the cold wind of the high pastures. He could smell the fragrances of acetus and wild islambine. Vamberfeld slumped against the cold, hard side of the watchflame pillar. He uncurled his fingers from the silver trinket and placed it in the recess, just like he had been shown during the miracle. His hand wasn't shaking any more. That was good. An Urshul bolter round blew out the back of his head. Vamberfeld fell back into the snow, a sad smile on his face. 9. Chapter 18. Honor Guard.
Taken at face value, we were clearly mad. Actually, I believe we're clearly mad most of the rest of the time, so go Fethin figure. Colin Corbeck, at Hagia. From deep inside its planetary core, obeying ancient instructions, the mechanisms of the Saint came alive. Vast psychic amplifiers woke and broadcast their signal. For just an instant. An instant enough to send abject fear into the souls of the Chaos Spawn infesting the planet. An instant enough to cremate the minds of Ashul hosts choking up across the promontory. An instant enough to blow back the warp storm with such force that the advancing fleet was tumbled aside. An instant enough to show Tolin Dorden his smiling son again, to show Colm Corbeck one last glimpse of his father, to show Ban Dower a final vision of the old woman with the shockingly white hair in the refugee crowd, to show Trooper Nikkeg Vamberfeld the hard, penetrating eyes of the Chelan herdsgirl in the last moments of his life. Outside the Shrinehold, under a cold, blue sky, Ibram Gaunt limped out, and down a churned-up mass of snow and stone that used to be steps. He was clad in full dress uniform. The remnants of the convoy waited below. Beyond them, littered across the snows of the promontory, lay the fused and charred skeletons of 9,000 chaos-touched humans and the blackened wrecks of over 500 war machines. Hark. Hark stepped up and saluted the Colonel Commissar.
Units present and numbers correct, sir.
Very good.
Gaunt paused and looked back along the promontory at the lonely post-tomb the Tempellum Aetani had erected in the snow and rock beside the corundum pillar of the Eternal Watchfire. Gaunt climbed up into his waiting salamander.
Honor guard, mount up. As the commander orders, mount up and make ready.
Hark relayed down the line. Cries came back.
Column ready to move out, sir,
Hark reported. Gaunt thought of Slado for a moment, and the old blood pact. He touched the scar on his palm. Then he took one last look back at Vamberfeld's lonely post-tomb.
Honor guard! Advance!
He cried, making a sweeping gesture with his hand. The units began to rumble forward, under a spotless sky of frozen blue, down towards the head of the pass. That was Honor Guard, written by Dan Abnett, narrated by Toby Longworth. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2020.